Welcome to the Grinders Table, the podcast where we sit with C-suite executives and founders who are taking their industry by storm to figure out how you can build an exceptional career and business. Together, we'll try to uncover how they have both defined the odds and what you can learn from their experience. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Grinders Table podcast. And you know that we bring the best of the best to have conversations with them on how they've built their career, the insights that they've garnered over the years, and any other thing that they'd like to share with us. And today, we have somebody amazing with us today. And in my usual fashion, I don't like to introduce people. I would allow Anil introduce himself. So Anil, who is Anil?
I'm still trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up. But having said that, I'm Anil Atma. I am a consultant that works in the tech space, and my primary function is to bridge the gap between business and tech. Most tech companies don't realize that they have to grow up to become a business sooner or later, and that's what I solve.
Wow. Sweet, simple, and straight to the point. But Anil, before you got to this stage of your life or your career, let's dig into the backstory. And what was your formative years like?
Well, the thing is, if you want to get to the genesis of it all, I'm Canadian, but I grew up all over the world. I was born in the Philippines. My father was an industrialist, and for business opportunities, he kept moving his factory across Asia into multiple different regions, depending upon where it was economical at the time to produce. And that exposed me to, you know, a lot of cultures very early on, and the ability to adapt into any situation. And as you can imagine, children going from one school to another school is hard enough, let alone going from one country to another country. And eventually when, he stopped doing that, I just found myself, in love with the idea of traveling and meeting new people and seeing new places. And that is what brought me first to Nigeria, as far back as 1998, when I first came to Nigeria. That was just on a brief, 5 or 6 year stint. At that time, Nigeria was still under the military rule, and I came in as a bachelor because I hadn't ever been to Africa before and I wanted to witness it. And when I came to this place, there was something palpable in the air. You know, I knew that there was something here and I couldn't quite figure out what it was. And after many years of pondering it, I finally have it figured out. Now,
Yeah, go on.
No, and what it is the hustle culture. I think that's the entrepreneurial spirit. You know, the mindset of an average person that whatever they have to do, they will figure out the next steps to make it. This was the first time in the world that I had come across that kind of mindset. And I was absolutely enthralled by it. I stayed here for 6 years. At the time I was working, for one of the larger companies, and I was responsible for sales. And that's how I started my career in Nigeria. But at the time I got married and I wanted to start a family, and I just said, you know, Nigeria still was going through its, you know, its rebirth as a new democratic society, and things were still a little rough. So I just decided to relocate my family back to Canada, and, you know, start my family, there. In 2005, I decided to start, to venture into tech, and have a startup, except, back then it was called the .com. And what I did, and I do brag about this. There's no way that I can verify it to be true, unfortunately. But the bragging version of it is that I started the first restaurant delivery service in Canada. But the truth is that I know that I started the first restaurant delivery service, at least in Ontario. That I know there was nobody else doing it in my state. This was in 2005, which I scaled, which I bootstrapped the entire way because, again, I was not smart enough to know that I could raise money and that that was an option. So I figured out a business model where we were cash positive from day one, and I spent the better part of the next 5 years just rapidly scaling that business until I was able to sell it in 2010.
You have war stories. I'm going to dig into that first business. What would you say you would have done differently right now? Okay, apart from raising outside capital, but what would you have done differently now that you have the power of hindsight?
To be very sincere, those 5 years are a blur. I had my baby in the same year, my son. I decided to pursue an MBA a couple of years into it because I just thought that that would make me better at business. And I was literally working 7 days a week, 20 hours days. So yes, I wish that I had hired more competent help, and I could delegate it effectively. That's one of my bigger regrets, that I didn't do that. I sometimes wonder if I had done that more, would we have gotten better scale? Raising was another big thing, which I didn't realize at the time that I had an option. So but that also, these are the questions that I ask myself in hindsight, that would we have scaled more? Could I have gotten more traction? Would I have been, the Deliveroo of Canada had we done these things effectively?
Okay, so let's fast forward to your business experience right now. I mean, let's just say that that was your immersion into the world of, growing businesses. Now, right now, in terms of, I know you have a lot of stories, so maybe you just pick a few of, your business war stories that you've experienced, especially when you came to Nigeria and tried to build a business here.
So business war stories. Post this, I was looking for what to do next, and I had an opportunity out of Nigeria to come back and to assist a company that was essentially a legacy company, and it had some issues with profitability and scalability, and I applied myself into that venture at first, and what I immediately realized is that time in Nigeria works at a very different frequency, I guess, for lack of better words. That was one of the initial problems that that I had to overcome. But when it comes to war stories, it's issues like, you finalize your P&L, for instance, and you have, a certain amount of money that you've made, and you're very comfortable remitting the dividends to your shareholders and saying this is what, has come your way out of, entire year of enterprise. And then you have a statutory audit, by the government, and some of the numbers that are pulled out in that are essentially would put you in a situation where you have to go back to your shareholders and ask them for the money that you paid them and say, can I get that back, please? Because I now have to pay the government. Some unfair or unregulated issues with regards to support in terms of being able to clear out certain goods when you're importing them. The dollar has not been a friend to anyone lately. I've also had issues where we built an entire enterprise, an entire business model around support from the government, which was, and we were early for this. We decided to start manufacturing solar panels in Nigeria as early as 2016. And we had an entire business model that worked, but it only worked because of the economies of scale that we needed to produce a bare minimum of 4 gigawatts of panels annually. And for that, we didn't have the offtake in the Nigerian market. So we partnered with a government agency called the REA, and they had assured us of 40% of the offtake, as they had a very aggressive agenda of installing solar panels across northern Nigeria. But by the time that the project came to be, the administration changed, and with that went out our agreements. And very effectively, we realized that we would not only have to start from scratch, but essentially we are now stuck with this capex that we have invested, and we wouldn't be able to monetize it and achieve the economies of scale that we originally anticipated. So yeah, these are some of the issues that we face in this ecosystem.
Yeah, so there's a reason why I asked for this, because one thing you mentioned, your first experience in Nigeria was, you know, that hustle mindset. And I oftentimes wonder, is the hustle mindset enough to succeed? Or else, Nigeria will be a great nation. We Africans, Nigerians, we hustle, right? But when we look at indices for development and just general welfare, we see that we still lack way behind, right, compared to the West. So again, do you have thoughts on that?
You're absolutely right. The hustle culture or the entrepreneur mindset doesn't necessarily translate into success. Some of them may stumble upon it, but mostly where we are lacking is the education that we require to be effective business people. One of the central conversations I have in the tech space with founders is, after the initial hi, how are you? I'm Anil. The third question I usually ask them is, how do you make money? And some of them get into this whole thing about, oh, we're doing this and we're doing that, and that when that happens, that may happen and this could happen. And I always tell them, I said, if you can't tell me like you would tell a 5-year-old how you make money, we have a problem. Because that is the gap that I was talking about earlier on, that in the tech space, or basically even in the real sector, people don't understand the difference between profit and loss and cash flow. And the simplest way that I can explain profit and loss is like a cancer. It could kill you, but you could also survive it, and you could drag a loss for 4 or 5 years and then kind of figure out your way and still recover. Cash flow is like a heart attack. You get it now, your heart explodes, you drop dead now. So if I ever have to prioritize one over the other, I would always prioritize businesses that have a better cash flow than an income statement that projects massive profits, but the cash can't be found. So these are these kind of ideas that are lacking, and not because of the lack of trying. People try, but they just don't understand that this is one of the concerns, or this is the way to look at the business, and this is the way to grow businesses. And it's painful for me to see somebody making these attempts and not succeeding because of the mistakes that are very easily avoidable if they had the proper guidance.
Yeah, true. Really good insights. But in terms of learning and, you know, personal improvement, because I think that that's core to anybody that's going to succeed, right? And when I say learning, it doesn't have to be within the four walls of an educational institution. But for you, how do you see learning, and how do you keep yourself updated?
So I think that as long as you're alive, you have the responsibility to constantly educate yourself. AI didn't exist a year ago. It's now out there. I am consulting with a company in the space, and I can't pretend that I'm any expert on AI. But what I am an expert is how to take that idea and monetize it and figure out how it is that we could make money off that. So we have the responsibility as human beings to better ourselves every single day. The resources that are available today are phenomenal compared to what they were when I was growing up. Like literally when I was growing up, you only had the schools, and at best, if you lived in a good town, you had a half decent library. The other day I was at a dinner, and we were talking about encyclopedias being a thing when we were growing up, and how these encyclopedias were mandatory, like for families that considered themselves learned, that you would literally have these binding books in your house. And my father, for one, had mandated that every night at dinner, I had to tell him something that I had read from one of the encyclopedias and explain to him what was brilliant about that. I think it's that kind of like learning or that kind of parenting from early on that creates this mindset that you want to learn something new every day. Now you have your YouTubes, you have Udemy, you have Khan Academy, you have all these resources, you have the internet, you have ChatGPT to educate you on virtually anything that you need to know. So there is no barrier to learn as long as the basic skill sets are taught in primary school. If you can learn to read, write, and basic math, I think you have the responsibility upon yourself to educate yourself.
Well, what would you say is the most important skill set to you, again, because it's very subjective, that you've learned or honed over the years?
Sales. the ability to sell. You know, my father, again, I referred to him earlier, and he had this massive sign at the back of his office when I was a kid, and it's ingrained in my head. And the sign said, nothing happens till somebody sells something. I started off my career in sales, and what it does is it teaches you to be, it teaches you tenacity. It teaches you to be persistent. It teaches you to keep trying. And your, obviously your ability to communicate your value. What do you do? Why is it that you are important? What is it that your product is going to solve, is the most important part of any business. If you don't sell, if you can't sell, if you're not effective in conveying that message across, if you're not able to show the value of your product, no matter how great it is, it's not going to pay the bills. And unfortunately, that's what a business is. It has to pay the bills for you to be able to continue to do that.
Talking about, you've talked about something that very significant. I mean, as an imposter that has really stuck with you. But what would you say is the most important or most pivotal piece of advice that anybody has given you?
The most impactful advice I ever received is that everybody should live their lives with a regret minimization factor. Which is the way that I basically look at a lot of the decisions that I have to make. And the way that it works is, in any given situation, if you're presented an opportunity or you're, presented a situation, you kind of have to fast forward your life 10, 15, 20 years, or even, I mean, if it's a really, pivotal life choice, then even at your deathbed, you have to imagine that you're 80 years old and, life's flashing you by right now. And how do you feel about making that decision or not making that decision? And if you can truly put yourself in that mind space, and what it does is it overwhelms you with regret, then you should come back into this moment and do the thing that would reduce that. Like, you basically should do everything possible in your power to reduce that stuff. At that point in time, you know for a fact that I tried, it didn't work, no harm, no foul, but you wouldn't look back at your life and say, I wish I had done this, or I wish I had tried that. That's just no way to live. So this is something that I take very seriously.
Okay, I had to just note that down, risk mitigation factor. Yeah. That's something, that's really, really good advice. In the same vein, right, you find that bad advice is given with as much conviction as good advice, right? What is one advice you hear? And let's even maybe shine the light more on for founders and entrepreneurs. What is one advice you hear and within you're like, nah, I don't agree with this?
Raise more funding. just keep raising money. that the solution to all your problems is raising money. I don't agree with that. I never have. I understand what you do, and don't get me wrong. Raising money is important. Scale is extremely important. Growth is, it's either grow or die. So I, having prefaced all of that, I agree with with that mindset. What this does, what this creates, unfortunately, is the mindset that, oh, I can always raise again. And evident now, you know, in our current, we're calling it the winter, right? the funding winter. You're seeing that companies that thought that they could raise after they raised in 2021, 2020, they're now running out of money. And as such, and they're running out of money, not because they needed to spend as much over the last 2 years, but because they believed in their idea that, oh, I've raised it once before, I can raise it again. It's just a series A or what have you. What these companies should be doing is taking a very long, hard look at their spending habits, their fiscal responsibility, their burn rates, and figuring out how it is that I can make this money last. I think at any point in time, companies should have at least 18 to 24 months of runway with them. And when things start to turn, they have the responsibility to revisit that and make that runway even longer. Raising should not be your first and primary focus. Effective growth, spending the money properly, applying the right resources at the right cost should be at the forefront of your thinking. And then, by the virtue of that, raising becomes easier because the next time you tap on an investor and they look at how well you have managed your funds and how frugal you have been and how effective you have been at making it last, then raising becomes almost like a byproduct of good business governance.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there's one question that I often now ask guests on the podcast, it's a framework. Anyways, power, money, fame, and pleasure. Which of them how do you rank them in your life? Which is the top? Which is the least? Which do you view as very important to you, and which is the least important to you? Power, power, money, fame, and pleasure. If you rank them, which is most important to you and which is least important to you?
And it just has to be these four options. I can't add a fifth. Okay.
Well, yeah, you can add. You can add. See, that's why I like this. Everybody has different perspectives.
So the most important thing for me, I'll continue with your four, but I'm just going to give you that the singular most important value for me would be time. Time above all. Because you can always make more money, you can always get more powerful, you can generate more pleasure, but you can't create more time, whether you're, Aliko Dangote or just Neil, you have 24 hours a day to work with. So, the value for time, the ability to maximize, a day, being effective at what you do, that's the most important. And then I think I would structure it pretty much the way like you said it, which would be, it would be followed by power because, you can, with the basis of power, you can always generate more of the other three, followed by money. People misunderstand the two sometimes, that money is power. But I actually think that power can help you make more money as opposed to the opposite, of it. I'm sorry. I forget the third one.
Yeah. There was pleasure.
I think pleasure should be the last part of the equation. It's important. And a good life well lived is definitely part of the way people should create value for themselves, but it comes after the spectrum, I believe.
Talking about pleasure and creating value for yourself, at what point? Again, I'm asking this because this applies to founders and this applies to people in the C-suite, especially if you're in a really tough leadership position. At what point do you tell yourself that, hey, you're sacrificing too much of your life for this goal? Or is it okay? Again, I don't think that's the right answer, but I always like to get people's perspective on it. When is enough enough? When can you tell yourself, hey, okay, I need to slow down. I have a personal life. I have my health. I have my family. I need to focus on them.
This is a highly personal, opinion. So I really don't think there's like a one size fits all kind of solution here. And by that, I'm a big believer of the idea of, you know, a work-life balance. But then coming from a workaholic like myself, my work-life balance equals to me working, you know, 14-hour days. I'm perfectly happy doing that. I also believe in the old adage that, you know, if you find, something you enjoy doing, you never have to work a day in your life. So I feel that, the things that tire us out are the missions that we associate ourselves with that we don't truly at the core of us believe in. It could be just an idea that, oh, this is a quick way to make a buck. It's a great opportunity. Let's make money. And when you associate yourself with that, you make the money, obviously, but you sooner or later realize that, there's an amount of money that you reach, and beyond that, it no longer is worth that effort. And then you have, people like Mother Teresa, for example, who basically gave her life in the service of others, not caring whether or not she lived well or whether she got the recognition for it. I mean, that's an extreme example, obviously. So I find that this is a highly personalized view from people, but everybody should keep in mind that no matter what you built, no matter how large you built an organization, if that person is to drop dead tomorrow, the company, if it's structured well, will still continue, or they would be replaced. Everybody needs life balance. Simple that I can. This is the you draw for yourself. Everybody has to decide that for themselves.
Yeah. And at this point, we come to the end of this really, really insightful conversation. Thank you, Anil. It was really, really, really great having you reschedule this and fix this in your calendar. I'm really, really happy that we got to speak.
Oh, it's much, my dear friend. I've always enjoyed speaking with you. So thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate that.
That's all on today's episode of The Grinders Table, and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at MonsieurUM. That's at Monsieur for Mr. in French, UM. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.